Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach Trip Lanier.
If you were retired from the NFL and had $1 million in the bank, would you join the Marines? You want to make a big change in your life, but just can't figure out what or how to do it. And how far would you go to find true fulfillment? Today we're talking with Jeremy Stott about veterans and why in the hell he traded the good life for Iraq. Welcome to The New Man. Today we're talking with Jeremy Stott. He's got an interesting story here. He's gone from the NFL to joining the Marines to serving in Iraq, and now he's put together the wall-to-wall bicycle ride. We're going to go into all of that today. Jeremy, welcome to The New Man.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So you guys are out on the wall-to-wall ride, which we're going to talk about in a bit, but where are you guys today on the ride? Where are you talking to us from?
Well, currently I'm in Bullhead City, Arizona, but we actually stopped off in Laughlin, Nevada, just right across Colorado there into Bullhead. We're just trying to get some stuff taken care of on the RV to make sure that we can continue with this ride.
Beautiful, beautiful. So let's talk a little bit about your past. A lot of guys are out there, they're not liking their job, they're not liking where they are, but you had a different experience. You had a similar experience, I should say. You were in the NFL, is that right?
Absolutely. I spent 6 years in the NFL, played with Pittsburgh, Oakland, Seattle, and St. Louis. Those are the teams that I signed with. And then, after the 9/11 attacks, I just really kind of, took a real deep look at myself and some of the things that were going on in my life. And then just decided that, I just wasn't too happy with the way things had transpired. I just decided that I wanted to do something, to serve others other than myself. And so I joined the Marine Corps.
Wow. Okay. I mean, because that's such a leap. I imagine most NFL players, when they decide they want to have a bigger impact in the world, they start a foundation and do some speeches and work with some kids in the summer. But you completely change directions.
Well, absolutely. The one thing about it is being an NFL player and shooting the stereotype, and once you're an NFL player and you're done playing, people just kind of go, oh. It's not like it's some guys try to live with that stigma with the label of the NFL player. And, it's a lot of guys live off of that. They thrive off of that. And that's just something I didn't want to do. I just didn't want to have the normal life, that would just completely kill me. I wouldn't want to work a 40 hour week job and do it for 30 years for retirement. I want to live life to the fullest and try to make the most impact and leave a lasting legacy behind. And in order to do that, you have to make some sacrifices. And, the way I look at it is life is, we're here just a very short time. And if we're not here to make this place a better place, and what's the point of doing the things that we do?
Okay. And so how did you decide that becoming a Marine was going to be the place where you could really make that positive impact?
Well, joining the Marine Corps was one thing. It was simply to learn how to be a team player, not an individual. A lot of times playing in the NFL, and sometimes, in college it can happen as well, but a lot of guys start to lose their identity and they start to become what, quote-unquote society wants us to become. And, I really had to really break that stigma of, oh, he's an NFL player, he's this, he's that. And the Marine Corps is just a way for me to break down the I and become a team player. And, you know, the Marine Corps has been doing it for a long time, and they really had a great way of breaking people down and showing you that it's not about you. And the great thing about the Marine Corps was that it really taught me a lot of things about me that I had never even thought about, you know, like patience and learning to serve others and to know to look out for the guy to the left, to the right of you, instead of just like kind of the NFL mentality of I. You know, too often we watch these interviews with these guys and it's all about what they've done and they got to get their money and they got to do this to do that. It's just like, man, that's such a selfish lifestyle that, you know, the Marine Corps really broke me of that.
And so being in the Marines was ultimately more fulfilling.
Absolutely. You know, like I said, the thing about life is what I'm learning is that, you know what, life is so much more fulfilling when you serve others and take care of others and really make an impact on other people's lives, because at the end of the day, no one's going to care how big Jeremy Stott's house was. No one's going to care how much money was in Jeremy Stott's bank account. No one's going to care what kind of, you know, car that Jeremy Stott drove. The only thing that people are going to care about is how Jeremy Stott treated others and the relationships that I cultivated throughout my life. You know, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. You know, you could be the richest man in the world and die with nobody by your side, but I'd rather be the poorest guy and have, you know, tons of friends who respected me and loved me for, you know, doing the right things in life and not being a, you know, bullheaded SOB and trying to get ahead in life.
Got it. So you were friends with Pat Tillman, who also left the NFL to go serve in the armed forces. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it, it's amazing what Pat did and what him and actually Kevin did, his brother as well. You know, they went out there and they wanted to serve their country and see what it was all about. And you know, unfortunately, Pat was killed in 2004 due to a friendly fire attack. But, you know, Pat was just a great guy. You know, he always knew where he stood with him, and he'd always give you an honest answer. And the thing about it is you never took it, you know, I learned not to take things personal from Pat just because of the way that, you know, he was just a guy that was just very, you know, he was intrigued by people. He wanted to know what made people tick. And, you know, I think for him joining the Army was just to try to see what it was all about and to do something bigger than himself.
Got it. And so did you join up after his death? Is that the timeline?
Yes, absolutely. After what happened is basically back in 2001, after 9/11, I was just thinking about leaving the NFL and joining the Army. And Pat and I had the same agent, and Pat was, Frank Bauer, who was our agent, called Pat and said, hey, you know, Jeremy's, you know, thinking about joining the Army or some crap. He needs 4 games to, you know, get his retirement. Will you talk to him and find out what's going on? And so me and Pat talked for like an hour and a half, 2 hours on the phone, and I made a promise to Pat. And I said, all right, Pat, you know, I'll go back in the NFL, get my 4 games for my fourth credit of the season so I can get my retirement. And then after that, I'm going to do whatever I want. He said, all right, well, you know, give me your word. And I gave my word. And so I went back in the NFL and got my 4 games that I needed. And then in 2005, in 2003, I retired out of the NFL, and I figured, well, hell, I got one retirement on my belt. Why not join the AFL, the Arena Football League, do that for 4 years and get a second retirement? And then the first year with the AFL was in 2004, and then Pat was also killed in 2004, and I just said, you know what, I'm done, and just basically took my helmet off, threw it, and took my pads off, threw it, and walked off the field. You know, of course, I got suspended from the Arena Football League because they were going to make an example of me and say that they weren't going to accept that kind of, you know, bad behavior, because I was going to mourn my friend, so they suspended me. So I turned around, sued him for wrongful determination, won, and then, I guess it was maybe 10 months later, I joined the Marine Corps in 2005.
Okay, wow. I, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that, you know, it's been a tough few years, and whether they had eyes on making some kind of a career transition or a life transition before, I'm trying to imagine what kind of resistance you may have met being in the NFL, thinking about retiring, and then joining the armed forces. And beyond that, like you're not 18 years old going in. So I'm thinking about family, friends, your the people that you work with, your agent, and then just a cultural difference of joining the Marines. It seemed like everything was kind of stacked against you to make this change. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, first off, I'm, you know, 6'6", 260 pounds going in the Marine Corps. I was 29 years old. You know, I had a lot of different, you know, elements, you know, physically, you know, being, you know, a collegiate football player and as well as an NFL player. So the body wasn't as fresh and as young as the 19 year old kids that were just coming in out of high school. You know, they were still, you know, so there was youth against me and all that kind of stuff. But the big thing was, you know, mentally just taking myself back and just basically forgetting that I had played in the NFL and forget that I was 29 years old and really trying to adapt to what these 18, 19 year old kids were doing. Because I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of the stuff we did was kind of childish, but at the same time, it also broke down the eye and really concentrated on the team.
And so what did you notice? What were some of the things that you had to go through that process? What did you have to, you know, if you could talk about that a little bit more?
Well, you know, just, you know, some of the stuff that we're, you know, the drill instructors would do some certain things. And, in my mind, I'd go, that means nothing in the whole scale of things. But I went along with it. You know, I played the games knowing that what they were trying to do was completely, you know, so childish and try to break people down and to humiliate people and stuff like that, to really break a person down so that they could rebuild us back up as a team, as Marines. You know, I knew what they were doing, but, you know, I just had to go along and play the game just so I didn't stand out or I didn't become a nuisance or, you know, anything of that nature. So it was really tough in that aspect. And then, you know, having the guys, you know, they're upset about something or crying about something. I'm going, man, you guys have no idea, you know, what you're worrying about right now in, you know, 4 months ain't going to matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just, it's really hard to let a, you know, an 18, 19 year old kid who's so gung-ho about wanting to serve the country, wanting to be a Marine, you're trying to tell him, hey, you know what? The problems you're facing right now will be nothing compared to what you're going to be facing later down the road.
Wow.
You know, and trying to, you know, bring reality in that aspect to the guys was sometimes a little bit sobering for me because they didn't get it. You know, they're kind of like, well, no, this is the way it's got to be. And it's like, no. That's not how it's going to, you know, that's not how it's going to transpire, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole core, that process you went through was geared towards a young man in that particular mindset. You've already lived, you already had a career and come back. And so it's amazing to hear how you navigated that. And you kind of basically were an elder to them, because a 19-year-old guy thinks a 29-year-old guy's old.
Oh, absolutely. I'm an old man in the Marine Corps, especially when I'm, you know, when they got the sergeants and stuff, the DIs over there are only 24, 25 years old. And here I'm 29 years old, you know, hearing these guys talk about what their life experiences and what life's all about. I'm going, no, that's not really what it is. Because even those guys hadn't experienced anything outside the Marine Corps either. You know, you've got to remember, they came in the Marine Corps 18 years old. And by the time they were 22, 23 years old, they were, you know, promoted up to a sergeant level where they came back and were DIs. I mean, they hadn't really experienced the real world either.
Yeah.
You know, they had been kind of sheltered in their own little realm. And it's kind of just funny to me. It was just like, you know, man, even some of these guys are these sergeants and staff sergeants, heck, you know, they don't even know what the real world's about because they've been kind of sheltered in their Marine Corps lifestyle.
Got it. And so you actually took a gamble. You had an idea that if I join the Marine Corps, this is what's going to be fulfilling for me. This is what it's going to mean for me to take the eye, you know, to be less self-centered and be more serving to others. When did you start to get that you were kind of going down the road that this was going to work out for you?
Well, you know, the big thing about it was that, you know, I was born and raised in the church, brought up in the Christian faith, and I had kind of wandered away from that throughout my NFL career. You know, heck, I'm 21 years old, I had $1.6 million in the bank, I had anything and everything that I wanted, and I started to become real self-centered, going, hey, well, I did this, I did that, I did this, I did that. And, you know, about 8 years later, I realized, you know, I didn't do anything. I just, you know, I was there, I put the muscle, I did what I was told, and I just started kind of realizing, you know, in order to be a great leader, you must first learn how to follow and to serve others, because at the end of the day, we're all servants to someone or something. You know, you're a servant to your fans. You got to give them good, you know, programming. You got to give them good stuff that they want to hear. If not, then your show becomes an ultimate failure or anything like that. You know, even the president has to, you know, serve the people. If he doesn't serve the people, then he gets voted out. You know, at the end of the day, we're all servants to someone or something, and nobody gets to the top on their own. You know, unfortunately, today's, you know, athletic realm, we get a lot of the professional athletes to think, oh, I did that, I did this, I did that, you know, I did this. No. And they fail to understand that somebody had to take them from just a small child and to raise them up. And they also had to be taught how to play the game. They had to be taught how to lift correctly. They had to be taught how to do, supplements or a training, a nutritional diet. You know, a teacher had to teach them how to, get through the classes. You know, a coach had to mentor them. So nobody gets to the top on their own. And for these guys to think that they're the center of the universe, they're completely wrong, because nobody gets to the top on their own.
And it seems like that more self, what you're saying is that more self-serving position, I did this, I did that, is just leading you down the road where you're not going to be fulfilled anyway.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of the guys, and there was a statistic when I was playing that, 60% of the of retired NFL players were suicidal. And it's easy to understand why they would feel that way, is because, once they're out of the limelight, once they're out of that fishbowl lifestyle, they become a nobody. They become a has-been. And a lot of these guys can't handle that. They can't handle not being a somebody or somebody with a recognizable name. You know, these guys, once they're done with the NFL or any other sport, they're just done. They're just an average Joe nobody, and a lot of these guys can't handle that.
Well, yeah, it's like they're basically attached to that identity. If I'm not somebody, then I'm nobody, and why bother, right?
Absolutely. It's like, I bring up Terrell Owens only because it's like, okay, here's a guy, a great athlete, tons of money. Do you really think that he needs his own reality show to find love? Is his life that jacked up that he can't find love on his own, that he has to go on a reality show? But that show wasn't about him finding love. That was about him keeping his name out there, keeping his face out there, showing in the world that, hey, I've got the life by the tail. I've got money. I've got women, blah, 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 but I don't have any love. It's just like, it's almost comical that they actually put that kind of trash on TV. It's like, wow, this guy is that so far detached from what reality really is, and this is this kind of trash that they're promoting. I mean, I'd be embarrassed to be that guy.
Yeah, well, let's talk about reality. So then you get deployed to Iraq, and I imagine was there ever a moment of just like, wow, what did I get myself into?
Oh, about every day. I mean, once you hit it up, because like I said, once again, here I am, 30-year-old man, hanging around a bunch of 18, 19-year-old kids who think that, the war that they're getting ready to go into is a war that they see on the video games, or the war that that's been displayed on the news, or the war that was displayed in movies. And then you get over there and it's not what we expected. Nothing is ever what we expected.
What did you expect? I mean, what showed up that was like, wow, I did not expect this to be this way? What can you share?
Well, first, we didn't get live ammunition until we were all the way to where we were going to be, where our FOB was, which is a forward operating base. So we were in Iraq for like 2 weeks before we got any ammunition, live ammunition. But here you watch the news and you watch all the different stuff that's going on. And heck, I thought that we were going to be flying in on birds, getting shot at with RPGs and all kinds of stuff. And that just wasn't the case. We flew in, got there, had to sift through, piles of ammunition to find ammunition that was actually not corroded, not dented, where the bullets were set. We were using like basically surplus ammunition that had been recycled over and over and over and over and over. And I'm going, wait a minute, we're the United States Marine Corps and we have to sift through like recycled ammunition, and we had to go through and make sure that all the projectile was set on the cartridge and make sure that the ammunition was hopefully going to work, and if it was bad or anything like that, we had to throw it into the bin. But not only that, but I was expecting to basically have to fight our way in and fight our way out, and that just wasn't the case. I mean, we got there and there was a lot of downtime, and we'd find IEDs, or we'd get shot at here and there, or we'd one day we hit an IED and one guy lost a couple of fingers and another guy busted his face up pretty good. But it was nothing like you'd see on the TV. A 9-month deployment can't be summed up in a 2-hour movie. I mean?
Okay. All right. And so we, a lot of us over here, we don't know what's going on. Even though my father went to Vietnam and my grandfather was in World War II, we don't know what you guys are seeing over there in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so, I mean, what's the guy on the treadmill right now? What's he missing when he meets a veteran at the gym or something? What is he not getting about this guy?
Well, you know, the big thing is just that, you know, our veterans, they know that it's not about them. They joined up to serve, you know, and unfortunately, you know, our Vietnam guys and then World War II, you know, when they had the drafts and stuff, a lot of these guys were said, hey, look, we're going to war. We need your bodies. Let's go. You know, right now we have a 100% voluntary military system here. And these guys, these young men and women are going out there and they're saying, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and raise my right hand and I solemnly swear to defend this country, you know, from foreign enemies, foreign and domestic. And they, you know, they don't do it because they're looking for, you know, recognition. It's just more of like, it's hard. It's not like you say, hey, I'm a Marine or I'm a veteran or da da da. You expect people to give money or whatever. You expect to get what you're promised. And that's one of the reasons we're kind of doing this wall-to-wall bicycle ride, is to get our veterans the benefits and stuff that we were promised. You know, I mean, the thing about it is the federal government is always looking for loopholes in some which way to take the, you know, financial obligation away from our veterans so that they can keep it for other things, you know. As a veteran, you know, it hurts me when I see guys, you know, 21, 22-year-old kids who come out of the military service, and they're just looking to go and get their, you know, their GI Bill benefits, and they get run through the ringer, and they have to cut through all this red tape just to get their benefits, and it's just sad. You know, so a lot of these veterans, they're just looking for a thank you or some acknowledgement to say, hey, you know what, I understand, or I see what you're going through. What can I do to help?
Got it. You talked about suicide just a little while ago with guys in the NFL. I was reading something the other day. It said the suicide rate among veterans is like 18 per day. And I hope that number is grossly exaggerated. I imagine it's not. What's going on here? If the NFL guys are considering this option because they've lost their identity, what's happening with the veterans?
Well, right now, currently, I mean, and this is about a year old information, but right now we've got the highest rate of suicides amongst our veterans ever. Right now, you're correct on the number. It's every 80 minutes a veteran attempts suicide, and out of those 80 minutes, 18 succeed a day. But the thing about it is that that's only out of the 17 states that report it.
Wow.
So, okay. I mean, that's just half, you know, that's not even half of the states. And so, you know, it's a huge epidemic. And the thing about it is since we started this ride, you know, we probably get an email a day from people. Hey, you know what? I appreciate what you guys are doing. My cousin, my brother, my dad, so-and-so, blah, 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 you know, committed suicide 4 years ago. You know, there was no signs and nobody reached out to him and nobody did anything about it. And so what this wall-to-wall ride is, what we're just trying to do is just trying to ignite the spirit of unity throughout all of our veterans, bring all of our veterans together so that they have peer-to-peer counseling. You know, no veteran's going to call a 1-800 number right before they suck start a 9. It's just not going to happen. You know, that's why there's no signs. But we got to get that, you know, because that's one thing about, especially in the Marine Corps, you know, when you're on a Marine Corps base, you'll walk around, you'll see Marines, hey, good morning, you know, good morning, Sergeant, good morning, Corporal, you know, whatever, talking to each other, greeting those people. And it's just a way of making sure that individual is recognized. You know, sometimes that's all a person needs is to feel like they've been recognized. You know, hey, how you doing? We don't talk anymore.
Is it part of the culture in the armed forces that, you know, it's up to, you know, I'm here for the team. It's not about me personally. We've talked about that even in this day and age. So if I need support, I imagine it's pretty hard to go seek it. Like you said, he's not going to call an 800 number.
Yeah, he doesn't want to talk to some guy he doesn't know or some woman he doesn't know, because you got to remember, you know, when you're in the Army or the Marine Corps or any of the military service, you live in barracks. And so if you got a problem, what do? You walk next door, you bang on the guy's door. Hey, you got a minute? Yeah, what's up? Well, this is going on, man. I just feel like doing this, man. You don't want to do that. You know, but once you get out of the military, they don't have that anymore.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the wall-to-wall bicycle ride. How is this helping? You know, you said you're raising awareness. Let's walk us through that.
Well, basically what the wall-to-wall cross-country bicycle ride is, we're riding 4,263 miles across the country. We're zigzagging our way across the country, and we're raising awareness about veteran suicide, a more efficient VA system, veteran educational information centers on all college campuses, as well as child obesity. Basically, we're just trying to make it where our veterans can get the benefits. The reason I bring that up, or the reason we're riding, is because in the state of California, our convicted criminals and our illegal immigrants get treated better than our veterans. And there's just something wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when you've got convicted criminals in the judicial system that are getting top of the line medical care. They're getting, you know, name brand prescriptions. They're getting the best education that money can buy. But yet our veterans are out there struggling, fighting just to get their benefits. You know, there's a loophole in the GI Bill now where the GI Bill is the last payer on the bill. And so what happens is, say, if I want to go and get, you know, register for classes, I register in August, September 1st, school starts, and then let's say September 5th, I have to pay those, you know, I have to pay for my classes or I get dropped. So I go ahead and run my credit card. Well, the GI Bill doesn't kick into the 15th, and next thing they go, whoa, wait a minute, your classes are already paid for. We don't need to reimburse you.
Wow. Okay. Something's way whacked out.
Yeah, you know, and the same thing like in California, you know, I had a kid who served in the military, served in Afghanistan, served in Iraq, came home to Bakersfield, California, playing at the JUCO there, playing football, and they were charging him out-of-state tuition, $232 a credit hour, whereas an illegal immigrant would get in there, tuition's waived, and they're paying $23 a credit.
Okay. And so you guys are out there raising awareness about these kinds of, I'm going to call it, it's injustice. It's injustice that this is happening. And so you guys are out there raising awareness. And so we all know about this stuff, so we can tell our legislators, and we can also spread the word to the veterans that these resources are available. Is that what you're saying?
Well, absolutely. We're just trying to make it where it's like one-stop shopping. You know, the Veteran Educational Information Centers on the college campuses, there's just a place where, you know what, a veteran could come in there, here's my DD-214, which is basically an exit paper out of the military service, say, look, here's my DD-214, you know, I'd like to get my education. You know, there shouldn't be anything more than that, but yet, they you know, you got to fill out these paperwork and these forms and do all this kind of trash that, you know, it just seems repetitive and redundant for these guys, because it's like, you know, they'll make a trip to you know, the school, and the school will say, oh, well, you need this and you need that. You need this paperwork and you need that paperwork. And then so they have to go back to the VA, grab that paperwork, and then run back to the school and then do all the rest of the paperwork. And it's like, you know, why should it be so difficult for these guys to do this?
Here are the big takeaways from our talk with Jeremy Stott. Number one, if you're struggling with your own job and think the solution is a ton of money and fame, think again. Even some of the big guys playing football on Sunday struggle with their job. Number two, Jeremy's dissatisfaction was because so much of his life was self-serving or self-centered. The more focused he was on himself, the less fulfillment he experienced. He realized that relationships, that helping others was what was most fulfilling for him. Number three, making any kind of transition is difficult. There will be resistance, so expect it. I see too many guys waiting for permission or a red carpet to roll out before they'll make a change. That'll never happen. If you want to make a change, it starts with you, and you will meet resistance. Remember this, resistance doesn't mean that what you're doing is wrong. Number four, Jeremy really didn't know if joining the Marines would be fulfilling. He took a chance. It was a big experiment. I imagine if he was disappointed, he wouldn't have given up on what he was committed to. He was committed to finding fulfillment. There are many paths leading to fulfillment. Many of us get confused and commit to the path and not the outcome. So when the path is blocked, we give up, and that is a true failure. Instead, commit to fulfillment. You'll be more willing to experiment, and you won't grind to a halt when you realize a particular job, relationship, or project falls apart. You'll simply find another way to experience fulfillment. And number five, at this time, an average of 18 veterans kill themselves every day. And those numbers only come from 17 states in the Union, which means the actual number could be much, much higher. Men and women who have served this country and who have been promised benefits are not getting what they need. According to Jeremy, convicted criminals and illegal immigrants get better benefits than veterans in California. More awareness about this imbalance will make it harder for it to get swept under the rug. So please, spread the word. Find a local veterans organization to support or support Jeremy's foundation. So what can we, you know, the guys that's out there listening, getting pissed off hearing this, what can we do to support you and to support the veterans?
Well, the big thing is just spread the word about what we're trying to do. Help us raise the awareness. And if they'd like to sponsor us, they can go to walltowallbicycleride.com or they can call the foundation number at 661-330-1411. They can donate $100 and sponsor a mile. You know, if they want to sponsor multiple miles, more, you know, more power to him. But the big thing is that, you know, we're going to be out there for 100 days. We're hitting 71 stops. Actually, the stops we planned were 71 stops, but now the stops are actually starting to multiply because people are starting to hear about it. They want us to stop by and talk and visit with them. And so, you know, the 71 stops has multiplied. We got 15 states, 10 military bases, which now there's 12 military bases, and we're just trying to ignite the spirit of unity throughout the country. We're trying to ignite the spirit of unity throughout our veteran population. We're just trying to bring some unity to our country besides all the division that we have in it right now. We're just trying to do it through something as simple as a bicycle ride. And so, you know, we're inviting people to go to the website, check out the states and the stops that we're going to come through. Come join us, ride with us. You know, everybody can ride a bicycle. Come ride with us as we pull into their towns, and then, you know, just support us in that way. That'd be... you know, that's the best thing we can ask. And, you know, at the end of the trip, we plan to get to the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. on Memorial Day weekend, Memorial Day 2012, for the 25th anniversary of Rolling Thunder and the 30th anniversary of the Vietnam Memorial Wall. It's just our way of saying thank you to our Vietnam conflict veterans for the sacrifices and humiliation that they had to endure for us current conflict veterans to get the warm welcomings that we're getting. You know, it's just our way of saying thank you to the Vietnam veterans. We're dedicating all of our home, the welcomings that we get to the Vietnam guys, and saying, hey, you know, this welcoming isn't for us. This welcoming is for you. You know, thank you for what you went through.
Wow. Man, Jeremy, this is inspiring the hell out of me. All of that information that Jeremy just said is going to be on the website, walltowallbicycleride.com. Is that right, Jeremy?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks to you and your partner, Wesley, for this ride. I hope to get to check in with you guys soon. Thank you. Thank you
much. Thank you. Whenever, if you need anything, please don't hesitate to call.
Right on, man. You rock. There's so much more to The New Man than these interviews, so visit thenewmanpodcast.com and join the mailing list so you never miss another update. Thanks for listening.